All right, today, so we're continuing yesterday's Gemara. Yesterday's Gemara, if you remember, we left off with the Limud, the Gemara by Sheretz. The Limud by Sheretz was that we differentiated between Sheretz Shetzafa, right, floating Tuma, and versus stationary or grounded Tuma. So the difference would be why you have a Safek Madlon, right, a Safek whether you touched it or not. If there is a Safek Magal with regards to Tuma that's floating in the water, then you're going to be Tahor. If there's a Safek Magal with regards to water, a Sheret that's on the ground, then you're going to be Tameh. And that was the differentiation in the Limud, but same with Tuma Tzapa versus Tuma Al Ha'aretz. Now the Gemara is going to discuss this. The Gemara, or at least we asked, the Rosh asked the question, what about our Mishnah? Which is what we discussed yesterday at the end of this year. Says, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is talking about Tumas Mace that is Tzafal Pnei Amayim, right? And therefore, why isn't it over there? Don't we say Safek Tahor? Why do we say in our Mishnah that it's Safek Tameh? So the Rosh differentiated between Tumas Ohel and Tumas Magal. That Sheretz is Tumas Magal, and the application of this din is only going to apply to Magal and not to Ohel. Whereas, we're talking in our Mishnah, we're talking about a Safek case where he was Mahil, Safek where he was Mahil on the Tuma. So in that case, there's no application of this din over there. So now, we're going to start today's Gemara. As an introduction, I'll just point out that the Tosos and the Mefarish learn, like the Rosh also, that the application of this Tumas Sheretz applies to Tumas Mace as long as it's right, Magal, Tumas Magal, meaning we'll differentiate. As long as the mace looks like Sheretz or is acting like a Sheretz, which is that it means it has Tumas Magal, touching. You have a Suffolk if you touch the Tumas mace that's floating. You have a Suffolk if you have a Tumas Sheretz that's floating. In both those cases, you will be Tahor. Right, because they are comparable. Now, when it comes to Suffolk Ohel, which is no application by Sheretz, that's not going to apply. That's not going to have any of this din. That's the way the Rosh, the Meforish, the Tosos, and the Rosh going over here. The Rambam, on the other hand, so was upset about this. So he says, well, what do you mean? So the Rambam actually says that there is no Tuma by Mace, meaning that this din is applicable only to Sheretz. And therefore he is, in this next
piece, Tahara is applicable to Sheretz.
Right, the Suffolk, if you have a Suffolk Mago, it only apply by Suffolk Magal Sheretz. If you have Suffolk Magal Tumas Mace, that will be Tameh. Right. Even by Magal, that'll be Tameh. And that's where the Rambam was. So because of that, if you look at the Hagosa Gra here in our Gemara, the reason I'm giving you this introduction is in our Gemara today, the Rambam wipes out any Girsa that mentions Mace as being the question over here. Rambam's Girsa is all Sheretz because he believes the din is unique to Sheretz, because that's where the Limud is from, and it's only Sheretz. The other Rishonim, on the other hand, learn, no, the din is not a din in Sheretz, a din in Magal, right? And then Magal can apply in different forms, even though there are more stricter or stringent forms of Tuma, like Ohel and all these other things, but within those contexts, they still have a category of Magal. I mean, Tumas Mace and Zab, they all still have a category of Magal, and that Magal will have the same application as Sheretz. Okay. All right, so today's Gemara. Let's go. Tanu Rabbanan. Kol Anitalim Vanigvarim Spekan Tameh. So, how does this happen? Either it's carried or dragged, the suffix is tameh. They are the equivalent of being in stationary position. So, when we talk about tzafal pnei amayim, floating, right, that being carried or dragged does not qualify as floating. And so, the way the Rosh describes it, I'll give you, he's walking his pet Sheretz over here, or he's dragging his pet Sheretz, but the Rosh says, not those Sheretz biyado,
but he's carrying his dead pet Sheretz.
Yes, yes. Right? Oh, Garo Baretz. He's pulling it along the ground. Eitzel Tarot, passing by some Truma. Sufik Naga, Sufik Lo Naga. And it's a question whether when he was dragging the Sheretz along the ground, did it touch the Taros or not touch the Taros? That's the question here. So in those cases, we say Spekan Tameh, because it's Kiminu Achin. Now, Vahaniz Rakin, right, those that are thrown, and if you jettison the Sheretz, then it has a din like Tzapal Pnei Amayim, and therefore, it'll be Speikan Tahor. That Suffolk will be Tahor. Now, the exceptions to this rule are Minakzayis Amet, Vamayil Apnei Tuma. Right, so those two cases are Kzayis Minamet, or Amayil Apnei Tuma. So what is Chutz Mina Kzayit Amet? So you could learn, if you learn like the Rambam, Chutz Mina Kzayit Amet means that Mace has no Shaykhus at all here. Right? There's no din of Mace over here. The way the Rosh learns it over here is that there are two types of Mahil over here. What you have two possibilities of who was the Ohel or who was Mahil. There's always a possibility in Ohel that the Adam Tahor is Mahil on the Tameh, on the corpse, or the other way around. The corpse is Mahil on the person who is Tahor. And that's what this memra is addressing is Kazayit Min HaMeit, Da'amayil Opnei Tumah. In one case, the Gezayit Min HaMeit is going over the Adam Tahor, right? And the Ma'al HaPnei Tumah is the Tahor is going over the Tumah. So in each of these two cases, there's no application of Suffolk Tahor. Why? According to those Mishonim, like the Rosh and others, it's because you're talking about Tumat Ohel. And Tumat Ohel does not have a din of Tzapa. There's no din of Tzapa by Tumat Ohel. And so, therefore, they are excluded or precluded from this din entirely. And according to the Rambam, their Tumas Mace in general is Mufkam in Aparsha said. Now, the last thing is, Chol Devash Mitameh Milamala Kilamata. And anything that is Mitameh, above and below, and what does that include? The three is Zav and Zavah. So Zav and Zavah will also be left out of the Parsha of Suffolk Mago. Now, whether they'll be left out of regular Mago or only this type of special Tumah. That this is Tumah, I'm not going to get too involved with it, but this is a Tumah and Taros. Zav and Zavah have a unique ability to be metame things that they're not touching. Not only, not like mace, which can be Tumatame, not by Mago, not only by Mago, but by Ohel. They're found in the same Ohel or their Magalalab. Those are, and that's the stringency of Tumat Hamet. By Zav and Zava, they have the ability, for instance, if they are laying on a stack of mattresses, 10 mattresses, if they are Metame, the mattresses below them, even though they're not touching them. You know, they Metame the mattress that the Zav is in contact with, but he's Metame all the mattresses below him, and the same thing was called El Yunoso Zav. If there are mattresses above him, or things that are above him, he is Metame those items above him, even though he's not in direct contact with them. So, again, what does that mean? Does that mean that Zav and Zavah are Mufka from the Parsha totally of floating Tumah? Or is it this unique aspect of Zav and Zavah that's not in the Parsha? Why? Because here it's not Tumas Mago. Tumas Mago means you're in direct contact with the item, that's what makes it Tameh. Here the Zav and Zavah are able to Tameh things that they're not in direct contact with. So that's why it's left out of the Parsha. But if we were talking about a case where we had a suffix, whether Zav touched something or didn't touch something, it'll be just like Sheretz that was Tzafal Pnei Hamayim. All right, so that's the difference in the Rishonim here. And here's the Memras. Now the Gemara asks on this, Bayi Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama has a sequence of questions.
Things that are above the Zav as well, that prevents contact.
And, if he's in contact, say, with five mattresses above him, if he's in contact with the first mattress, that's contact. But the mattress even above that will be Tameh. No, if it was conducted through, the Tumah would drop and not get through. I mean, that is as an Ava Tumah. First mattress would be a Rishon the Tumah, and it would be unable to pass into the Shem.
It has to be contact. It's not like
to Yes, he has to be into some contact, right? That is correct. All right. Rami Bar Chama. So Rabbi Markham has a sequence of questions here. It takes a lot of imagination to come up with these cases, but we'll see that the Gemara is going to flip through these cases. That was not meant as a pun. All right, but so he says here, what do we have? We have mace b'kli. You have a piece of a mace that's in a utensil b'kli tapo pneamayim, and then this utensil is floating along the water. So again,
you have a mace b'kli.
So now this girsa here, the question by the Gra, for the Rambam amends the girsa that there's no mace here. He says it's sheretz. Again, the din will be the same, the question is the same, but the question whether it's mace or sheretz will depend on whether you think there's application of this din by mace. Right, so now what happens? So question, well, what's the din? Both are kli azlina, but are... Now, we have the Gersen Argumar as Misa, but the Tosfos and others have the Gemara as a Butter Maya as Linan, that we go after the Maya, after the water. So now, what is it? Do we go Butter Kli as do we have to go after the Kli? And in reference to the Kli, the Mace of the Sheretz is stationary, because they're sitting inside the Kli. Right. So then, Butter Maya as Linan, do we go with reference to the water? Meaning that, even though it's in a Kli, it's still floating with the Kli along the water, and therefore it's floating. So if it's against the Nafkamina, will be when you have a Suffolk Mago over here. If you have a Suffolk Mago, if you think it's inside the Kli, and the Kli is what determines that it's stationary Sheretz, and then it'll be Metameh, the Suffolk. Whereas if you think that the sheretz is really floating on the water, and that the kli is just ma'afsher, right, it's just a vehicle for it to float on the water, then when you have a safek, right, mag over here, it'll be tahor. Doubt about it. So imtim tamar butter kli as linan, if you think we go after kli. So now the Gemara, right, again, this is generally with the Rambam's shita, right, that once the Gemara goes imtim saloma, the Gemara's concluded now and moving on. So Gemara now is concluded butter kli as linan, that we go after kli, which means that it's kamudah gummy. It's as if it's as if it's stationary. Now,
he's going in the opposite direction here. He's saying Basar Kliya's Lina means that the Kliya is Safa, and that we Basar Kliya's Lina is...
So very good. You know, when I read the Gemara, I thought that would be, that the, that's a simple shot, but look here. Yeah, so look at the, here. Okay. So if you look, here, like read Tosfos, Bari Rami Mekrama, right? Rabbi Rami Mekrama, Basar Kliya, Kliya Safa, Pnei Amai, Mau, Basar Kliya's Lina, Vahana, and that is stationary. Oh, then we'll butter my linen, v'halonach. And that is not stationary. Right? That's the way I read the Gemara. The Mefarish reads it the same way. I thought, when I first read the Mefarish, I thought some of the other Rishonim would read it differently. But the Tosfos reads it the same way, that when you're in the Kli, it's munach. That when you're in the Mayo, that is not stationary. That is the floating part. The Rosh reads like you guys read, which is what I thought. I would have read the Gemara simply that, right, that butter kli as linan means that it's floating because you look in reference to the kli is floating and that's it. But, and then if you say butter maya as linan is that there's a hefsek between it and the water and therefore there's no thing. The Rosh learns the way that the, I guess you're, all you're explaining. Alright, the Mefarshim and Tosfos both learn that way. The Rosh learns the way you guys are learning, which is, when I first read the Gemara, I thought that was a simple way to read it. But then I saw the other Rishonim were going out of their way to read it the other way and changed the gears at the Maya. I think the Hagosa Gra also changes it to Maya. Yeah, he changes it to Maya. The Gra also changes the gears that way to Maya. Alright? So now, if it is that way, then the Imtim Saloma will be different, what the conclusion of the Gemara is.
The brackets of your Imtim Saloma is Bragas Lav.
Okay. So then it'll come to the same conclusion. If you guys say Lav Bakar Kli as Linan, then it'll come to the same conclusion. Alright. I'm going to read like the Tosfos and the Mefarish, but just that you guys are on, now know that it's the Rosh learns differently. Alright, fine. Imtim Saloma Bakar Kli as Linan. So if you say Bakar Kli as Linan, it's considered Munach. It's considered stationary. According to your gear cell, Lav Bakar Kli as Linan, and it's therefore considered Munach. It's considered stationary. Meis Agabi Sheretz Mahu. What happens if you have mace floating on top of a sheretz? Now again, according to the Girsas of Harambam, right, you're gonna have to say he's gonna switch the order and be a sheretz al gabi mace. It's gonna be a sheretz on top of a mace instead of a mace al gabi sheretz. Why? Because the question is about the top item. The contact is with the top item. So if you can say here, mace al gabi sheretz, then we're asking a question about you coming into contact with the mace. So according to the Rambam, there's no application here. So therefore, he reverses the situation and says it's the sheretz that's on top of the mace, because that's what you're going to come into contact with, and that's what the question is. Either way, the question is the same, which is what? Mace gabi sheretz mau. Kevin dahai tumas erifahai tumas shivo kamad machko. Right? So since these are different items, and they, therefore it is what? Like it is stationary. Why? Because it's like it's munach b'kli. Right? Tuma b'kli damya. Oh, Dilma Tuma Smichtahi, right? Or maybe it's one continuous form of Tuma. So this leans heavily towards the Girsa, or why, the way the Tosfos learned. And there's learned here, because what is it, the Gemara compares the fact that when, if you would say that Sheretz, right, and Mace are different types of Tuma, then it would be the equivalent of being Munach B'Kli, right? And then, if it's Munach B'Kli, that would be the stationary side of the equation. Or Dilma Tuma Smichtahi, or what, it's one form of Tuma. What's the difference between these? If you say that all Tuma is one category, then when the sheretz is on top of the mace, or the mace on top of the sheretz, either way, they are one item that's floating along the water. And therefore, it's floating. It's a floating Tuma. Whereas if you believe that Tuma Shiva, that mace, which has a higher form of Tuma that you come in for 7 days versus sheretz, which you only come in for one day, are different items, that means that the top item is actually sitting on something else. If it's sitting on something else, we're back to the right, the equivalent of sitting in a kli. If it's sitting in a kli, that's command the munach dummy, which is the way the gears of the Tosfos and other reads that that'll be stationary. If that's stationary, then it will not be a not in contact with the water. Is that considered floating because there's something in between that's also floating and they're one unit that's floating? Or is the item under it already create a hefsek between the water and the item, and therefore it's not floating on the water? The bottom item is floating on the water, but the top item is Munachan lay batamaita. That's the question here. Right now, Vim Tim Salomar Kamanda Makta Tuma the Kli Damio. If you say, if the equivalent of being Munach the Kli, meaning that there are different types of Tuma, and therefore they're stationary, then come up like this. But, I don't know if you say Tamei Vadai. This gears is very difficult, but then he would be Tamei. Sheretz Agabi Nevela. Vinela, Vela, Tafa, what's the din? If Sheretz is floating on Nevela, Sheretz and Nevela have the same din of Tumah. They're both Tumat Erev. Right? They're both one day, they both cause one day of Tumah. So now, if you said that the problem in the previous, question was the fact that it was Mace and Sheretz, because there are different levels of Tumah, I'll find you the same level of Tumah, right? And yet, they have the same question. Is it considered floating or not floating? Now, the Gemara says, Sheretz and Gavriel, Mao, Kevin's Tabai Tumat Erev, Inun Tumat Smichtahi. Since they are both Tumat, they are the same level of Tumat, it's one Grusha Tumat, and it's as if it's floating on the water. Oh, Dilma, Haikazayit, Haikad Asha. Oh, that must be something different between Nevela and Sheretz, which is the amount you need to become Tameh. By Nevela, you require a Kazayit to become Tameh. Whereas by a Sheretz, Tameh, Akizu, Kiad Asha. Right? Even the size of the lentil makes you Tameh. So the difference in how it makes her the shear for Tumat makes him into different. Qualitatively, it makes them into different types of Tumah, and it'll be as if, again, it's sitting on the other item, not sitting on the water. And for this reason, Pesach also points out, that's why Bozak Mar's example over here, which is that you have a Sheretz Agabi Nevela. Which Mark could ask the same question, Nevela Agabi Sheretz. Meaning that, why did it ask Sheretz Agabi Nevela, not Nevela Agabi Sheretz? What? So that's it. So Tosa says that's because Sheretz is Kadasha and the Vela is Kizais. So therefore the Adasha was sitting on top of the Kizais. Not that, I mean, they could both be bigger. That's not the case, but that's why the Gemara gave the example in this direction, because of that Sheretz. So the Gemara says, then the Gemara leaves it as unanswered, which is interesting at this point. The Gemara leaves it unanswered and says, almost like the Gemara jumps now and says, Sheretz will be Sheretz now.
Oh, but
right, with the other thing Saloma. I mean, it should have said, if you want to say that Sheretz will be Nevela, are still considered two different Tumah, then Sheretz will be Sheretz, what's that? I don't know. The Gemara before was said in Saloma. Here it does not. So here it just poses as two sequential questions. It doesn't get involved in the Intim Salomar. There's an implicit Intim Salomar, but it's not written here anymore. So far we said a Kli is considered not Safa when it's in a Kli, and if it's riding on a mace so far, we're going to say that it's not considered Tumas, right, Safa. And now we just have the case with the Vela, which seems to be that the Gemara is saying that it's not considered Safa now, although the Gemara never wrote that conclusion in here. The Gemara just jumps to the next question, which is Sheretz HaGabi Sheretz. Alright, Sheretz HaGabi Sheretz. Now the question is, now if you have one Sheretz on top of another Sheretz mouth, Hanei Vadei Kachi Yirunin, it's clear that a Sheretz and a Sheretz are the same thing, right? So therefore, it'll be Tumas Mitzvi. Odilma came into Mitzvah, came out Dodi Lo. Or since, maybe since they're two separate items, that they are not. Now, the Gemara concludes, Intim Salomar, Sheretz HaGabi Sheretz, came into Mitzvah, came out Hadei. Now the Intim Salomar, at this point in the Gemara, says that a Sheretz HaGabi Sheretz is considered two items. In Intim Salomar, that means obviously, the Vela and Sheretz are considered two different items. At this point in the Intim Salomar, so far, basically until this point in the Gemara has now concluded that everything is not considered floating, whether it's in a Kli, whether it's on a mace, whether it's on a Vela, or whether it's on a Sheretz, nothing is considered floating. Now, Kiman Demachal Kli, I mean, Sheretz Agabe Nevela Shini Mukha Mahu. Ooh. So now it comes up. What happens? You have a Nevela that decomposed or was liquefied somehow. So now, when the nevela is liquefied, so you have a sheretz that's floating on liquid nevela. Alright, so now, is that considered floating? I would say two questions. One, is it considered floating, period? But it's floating on the liquid nevela, is it floating? Or, if this liquid nevela is floating on mayim, is the sheretz now floating on mayim or floating on liquid nevela? So what's this din of this liquid nevela? Came into the mukhavile mashke. Since it's dissolved, it's now considered a liquid. Oh, dilma hayuchlu. Or maybe no, it is a considered a solid. Meaning that since it derives from a solid, it retains its status as a solid. You can ask the question in two ways. One is either that it's floating. Is it considered floating when it's
in liquid
nevela? Or is it now it's floating on water and it's that mashke between them? I think both questions are relevant here. Mara's answer makes it that it's irrelevant, which is Intim Salomar to Uchlahu. Mara says it's a solid. So if it's a solid, it doesn't matter if the sheretz is on top of it, it's on top of a solid, now not Tzapa, or if it's Masik between it and the water, it's also a solid and it's going to be Masik. So sheretz have got a Shifadzera Mahu. They have a sheretz floating on Shifadzera. What's the question? By Shifadzera, is that considered a liquid? Or because it came from a body, then therefore it's considered a solid item. It's very strange, limud. The same tips are given to akra, havaleki uchla, since it's separated out as a din of okro, sheretz agabi mechakas. This is the last question. You have a sheretz exploding on top of mechakas. Right? Well, mechakas, tzapin aplei amayim. And then the mechakas is floating on top of the water. Again, whether you need this girsa or not is not necessarily, the question might just be, is the sheretz floating on mechakas? So what's the question by mechakas? So mechakas are liquid, it's water, right? It's made out of water, but what's mixed up in the water of mechakas? The ash is the ether. So the question is, does the ether change the status of this from a liquid to, what's it called, mechakas, which is some sort of... It is, but tell me if you carry it.
All these numbers they have here.
All right.
Well, I wouldn't say because, but I'm saying this took a...
So the Tosfos says, very good. So the Rishonim here asked your question, but that, and the recess, in Okanami, the Gemara here could have asked, Omeri, who did the Masiminkar, Ether Omayim? You could have just picked. Right, they just, Ekoshimashkir, El Rabusin Okar, it's a bigger Kiddush, because Mechakos, I mean, they made it, you know, it's even bigger Kiddush that Mechakos work. But the recess, your question's true, even in Kulin, if you had mixed water with ashes, is that a liquid, or is that a solid?
Well, it's called a suspension.
Right, a suspension, thank you. So that the Gemara has a take about. That the Gemara doesn't know what to do. Until that point, we did have conclusions. All right, let's go.
All these questions could go any way. Everything is resolved except for this one.
Yeah, in Dim Salam, but the Dim Salam, all right, they just went through it.
It's very interesting.
All right, so Amar Rav Amnuna, back to our, back to Tumas Nahom. All right, Amar Rav Amnuna. Does your Rosh Pesach Shahokhu Bekever at Tahom Bishvishal Han Torin? So, over the case, you have a Nazir or an Osa Pesach that were Tamei Mace. And on their seventh day of being Tamei Mace, they get the Mechata sprinkled on them. Pardon me, the Mechata being sprinkled on that seventh day, they become Tuma, they come to contact with Tumas Tahom. Right now, is that Metao? Amar Rav Amnuna, Nazir Osa Pesach, Shahokhu Bekever Tahom, Bishvishal Han Torin. So here you have a Nazir and an Osa Pesach that on their seventh day, they are now getting the Mechata sprinkled on them, and then they come to contact with Tumas Tahom. When they find out that they came into contact with this Tumas Tahom is interesting, right? Because the way the Rosh reads it, he finds out about it after he completes his whole Nazirut. Not only does he find out about it now, but he finds out about it way after. Now he continues to do his Nazirut with Tara, and way after that, he finds out about it, and he found out that on the seventh day he was... I don't think you have to read it that far. The other Rishonim don't say that, but it's on the seventh day after... Right, we go to Mayer Bishvish Achash Gileach, the Chusar Erev Shemesh. That you're talking about here. After he went and cut his hair, he has Giluach Hatuma. Right, by a Nazir, he has Giluach Hatuma. Right, on the seventh day, you go ahead and you shave your head. Right, you get sprinkled for the seventh day of Tuma. And you have to go to the mikvah to go and then wait after the mikvah till the sun sets to make you Torah until you start your Nazir the next day when you bring your carbonate for the Nazir Satuma. So then he finds out after that. I mean, that's when the Tumas Tahom happens. I don't know why he has to wait till after the whole Nazir is over to find out about it. Even if he finds out about it now, the way the Gemara reads, it seems to be that it would be enough. Even if he finds out about it once he started his new Nazir. And the Rosh at least says that he didn't find out about it until he completed Zeros. Now the Gemara says, my time. Why is this true? So he says, the law lima Tumas Tahom the mistar. Tumas Tahom does not have the ability to undermine. Doesn't it? Once you are in the process of Tara, right, then the Gemara says, Tumas Tahom does not undermine a the other way. Meiti Rava, Yara li Taher mi Tumat Tameit, Tameit. Shkazkaz Tameit, Tameit. Shkazkaz Tahor, Tahor. Our Mishnah talks about a case, right, where he is Tamei already, and he's going into a mikvah to become Tahor, and then he bumps down to that, there was Tumas Tahom there. So what do we say his din is? His din is that he is Tamei. So you see, even in the face of Tumas Tahom, we say that Tumas Tahom is Tamei when you are Tamei. Right, because you have Pesach Tamei. So too over here. This guy is in a Shvi Shalom. He's on the seventh day of Tumas Mace, so he is Tamei. Right? He's not Tahor until the sun sets on the seventh day. So if he's not Tahor until the sun sets on the seventh day, he is Tamei. Why, when he came into contact with Tumas Tahom, is he Tahor? So somewhere in Samalei, Modin and Lachab and Nazir Shemekusar Tiglacha. So this is your question. I would agree to you, right, if we're talking about a Nazir before he did his Niluach. Right, then the answer is true. Why? Because then he's Becheskas Tumah, because he's still missing. In order to get out of his Tiglachas Tumah, what does he have to do on that seventh day? He has to get the Paradumah sprinkled on him. He has to get his hair cut. and he has to go to the mikvah. So if he's missing his hair being cut, then he's still in, quote unquote, kasrasa tumah, and therefore he would remain tamei if he comes into contact with tumas tohu. But after tiglachat already, he has a cheskas tara. So you're going to say to me, what do you mean? Why is he in a cheskas tara after he gets his tiglachat? He still has to go to the mikvah, and he has to have hair of shemesh, he has to have the sunset. What type of cheskas tara is that? He still is a tful yom, even after he gets to the mikvah and gets his hair cut. He's a tful yom until the sun sets, so he should be cheskas tumah. So why don't you ask that question in a second? I'm like, Rabbi Abba, now I'm on Dina Lachbos of Pesach. The lo mechusar v'lo klum. Right, I agree with you by Pesach. So Rabba asked the question on Rabba Nuna, and then Rabba Nuna says to Rabba, I agree to you by Nazir that if it was before Tiglach, I agree to your position that he's Bethesda Suma. And Rabba, on the other hand, says to him, I agree to you by Pesach, where there is no need for Tiglachat, that he is Tahor and it's a Cheskas Kara. So by Pesach, you have the exact question. By Pesach, what do you do on the seventh day to be ready to do the Korban Pesach? What do you have to do? On the seventh day, he goes, gets it sprinkled by the Paraduma, goes to the Mikveh, and then he has to wait for Erev Shemesh on the seventh day. So in the case of most Pesach, yes, he's missing, he's still a Tvol Yom. Why is he the Cheskas Tumah? So that's what Abai says. I'm another Abai. Abai Mechusar Erev Shemesh. He's missing the sun setting. So I'm away. So Rabba says back to him, Shim Shim Mamela Arba. The sun sets by itself. So when are you Becheskas Tumah? You're only Becheskas Tumah when there is an action remaining for you to do. Meaning that if there's no action remaining for you to do, or the action is outside of your control in some way, then we will not consider it as if you have done it. But once it's, you put the process
within that you have to do,
right, and the process is in motion, then as long as everything will happen by itself, you already have a din of cheskas tara already. You are, because everything, without you doing anything, you will become tahor, then you have a quote unquote cheskas tara. So that'll be the difference over here. When by Pesach? What happened by Pesach? By Pesach, you have, he went to the mikvah. All he's doing is waiting for Erev Shemesh, he's waiting for the sun to set. So that's the case, he already has a cheskas tara. By Nozir, there'll be two different stages. It depends if you're before the Giluach or after the Giluach. If you're before the Giluach, then you're still Mechusar Maaseh. Then you're missing something that will allow you to become Tahor. And since you're missing something that will allow you to become Tahor, then we say you have a cheskas tumah. But if you already cut your hair and did the Tiglachat, and you've gotten the Mikvah, and all you're missing is the hair of Shemesh, then we're saying the same thing by Pesach. So Nazir will have one aspect of it where it looks like a Korban Pesach, one aspect of it where it does not look like a Korban Pesach, and you have a Cheskas Tumah. Rav Nuna and Rabba both agree in the case where you're after Tiglachat, and you've got to make money, all you're waiting for is Erev Shemesh, that is Cheskas Tara. And therefore, if you come into contact with Tumas Tohu at that point, that will not be Mistar, that will not undermine your Nazirut. Again, when you find out about this Tumas Tohu is a good question. Right? At the Rosh, please, you find out about it way after your Nazirut. I think you can find out about it the next day, after you brought your Karbanot Tumah. Once you've done that, and you find out about it, that Tumas Tohu should not be okay, should not undermine the Nazirut anymore. Now, the Gemara says, Afa Baye Hodr Bey. And Baye eventually came around to Rabba's position. And how do we know that? From this next case in the Gemara Gitanya. Yom Lot Tavi, Tokolot Lotavi. Right, so this time about a woman who had a miscarriage. Woman has a miscarriage, has to wait depending on the zachor and the keva. Right, for a male miscarriage, has to wait 7 days of tumah and then 33 days of its tahara. And then according to, and if she has an akeva, she has 14 days of tumah and 66 days of tahara. We're going to use an akeva just because from a practical standpoint, it makes it more sense. The ability for such a case to happen is only really relevant by an akeva, which is what happens if she miscarries again within that 80-day period. If she miscarries again. Right, so again, with a zachar, it's going to be very hard to miscarry in that period and have a vlad kayama, because the Gemara believes that until 40 days, the vlad is not a kayama. And she's only tamei for 40 days. For her to be able to be miscarried during the 40 days of a zachar is very unlikely. Or almost impossible, basically. What?
Has she miscarried when she's Asur Mbala?
No, she's only an Asur Mbala. Oh, so it's a question. We don't have this thing today, but because we consider everybody Yoledet Bezabo. We have a chumrah that we say everybody is Yoledet Bezabo. But a regular Yoledet, after 7 days for a male, and after 14 days for a female, goes to the mikvah, and she's then a tzvul yom aruch, and she's mutter madala. Every dam she sees, all dam she sees
in
the next...
Says in
right, I mean, it's the limit of the Gemara, he brings it down, but all that dam that you see during that zman tahara is dam tahor, and she's mutter madala. Right, so now she miscarries again during that period of the 80 days, before she brings her karbanot. So here's what the Gemara says. If, the Brisa says, if yomalos tavi, if she becomes miscarries again on the day that she brings her karbanot, or at the point when she could have brought her karbanot, then she must now bring two sets of karbanot, one for each miscarriage. Whereas tokmalot, if she miscarries during the period of her tara, meaning like say on the 64th day, she miscarries, then she can bring one karban for both miscarriages. So that's the limit. The limit is whether if you reach a point where you can already bring a korban, then you bring two korbanot for the different miscarriages. If you never reach the point where you're already ready to bring a korban, they're all considered one, I would call it a miscarriage erifka. They have one long miscarriage, and therefore one korban will be applicable for all of these, all the miscarriages during that time. So now, yoko lo tavi aleda shlif neimilot, aval tavi aleda shlacham lot, now, what's the case here? The case here is if she has three miscarriages. Alright, so I would have thought, what if you have a case where you have toch malot means during the period, so you have the first miscarriage, so you have 80 days now, if she miscarries during that 80 days, then they bring one karban for the two miscarriages. Now, what happens if on the 64th day she miscarries? So now she has two miscarriages that have gone one karban. Then, 64 days later, she miscarries a third time. So now we're at day 128. Now to day 128, you're already outside of the period of the first miscarriage, which should only have gone for 80 days. But you're now within the period of the second, right, two and three overlap, or within the second miscarriage. So now, do we consider that toch malot or not toch malot? The effect that the third is encompassed in the second miscarriage, that make it also encompassed in the first miscarriage? Or not? Right. Or do we say, no, now that you're outside the realm of the first, you have to bring two karbanot here. One for the first and one for the third. So that's the Gemara's question. The Gemara says no. So that was the question. So read that again in the Gemara. And you bring it for later, it's after malot, viti prater mishnehem, and then that'll be good. Tamalom or malot mitara, but yom malot tavi, tof malot lo tavi. As long as it's still within one of the miscarriages, within the category of one of the miscarriages, it's all considered one long malot, and therefore you bring one, right, korban. So Amar Avgan, or Avgan, it's a shiny ocha, the mixture of carbon. No, the reason, why is it all considered one big, why is it considered one big miscarriage? Because she can't bring the karbanot. When she miscarries the first time and then miscarries the second time, the reason her first miscarriage doesn't end is because when she gets to day 80 of her first miscarriage, can she bring, or 81, can she bring the karbanot? The answer is no, because she's now coming from her second miscarriage. So the lack of her ability to bring the karban is what keeps it all within one karban. Until once she gets to the point where she can bring a karban, then already, right, then she's already outside of her miscarriage. But if she can't bring a karban, then she's still within the context of that first miscarriage, or within the context of miscarriage, she brings one karban. So now, as Mar says, I'm a karban, I'm showing off a mitzvah karban. So now, hatam nami mitzvah heret shemesh. So why don't we say the same thing on Yom Malot? If on Yom Malot she brings her karbanot and then goes to the mikvah, right? But she's still missing sunset on that 81st day. So why don't we say if she's missing the sunset on the 81st day, she's still within the context of the first miscarriage. If she's in the context of the first miscarriage, then she should only bring one karban for all the eight miscarriages. So what exactly is this mikvah she's going to? That he's talking about. This is a very difficult thing. When is a yoledet go to the mikvah? A yoledet goes to the mikvah for a male on the seventh day, and for a female on the 14th day. And then she becomes what's called a tzvul yom aruch. And she waits for the sun to set on that last day. So what exactly is he talking about that she is going to the mikvah over here? There's really no mikvah. So the Rishonim over here debate. The Mefarish over here says it's talking about the mikvah on the last day, which is different than that all mechusarei kapara have to go to the mikvah again. That's to be mafil. There's a din derabanan that all mechusarei kapara, when they bring their karbanot, go to the mikvah again, just to remind them that they are now leaving the realm of Tuma and coming to the realm of Tara. Right, so that's how the Mefarish explains it. This is the tzvila that's after the karbanot, and that's what we wait. There's actually this case of 81, it's in Pesachim. So now, what's the din of that tzvila? So the Mefarish says that's the tzvila. There are two problems with saying that that's tzvila. One is, it's a tzvila midrabanan. And here we're bringing up Pasuk, and we're dealing with a limud d'oraisa, and we want a tzvila d'oraisa. That's number one. Number two problem is, tzvila d'rabanan don't need Herif Shemesh. A tefillah is midrabanan, doesn't need you to wait for sunset. So even if you're required to go to the mikvah on 81st day midrabanan, you don't have to wait for sunset. You call it right away after you go to the mikvah. You don't need Erev Shemesh. So So the other Rishon, the Rosh, and the Tosfos over here say that the case is where she didn't go to the mikvah on the 14th day or the 7th day. She didn't go to mikvah that day, and then she waits and ends up going to mikvah on the 81st day. On those days she goes to the mikvah. I don't know if you really have to get there, because the problem is that you're mechusar Harav Shemesh. And this woman is still a Tevul Yom Arok. When she went to the mikvah, she's still missing the Harav Shemesh of the last day. Although truthfully, that Harav Shemesh happens on the 80th day, before she brings her Karbanos on the 81st day. But so why do you have to wait Yom Malos? Why do you have to wait the 81st day? So I think that's what the Rishonim after here. She's going to the mikvah on the 81st day, because she forgot to go to the mikvah beforehand. And now she's going to the mikvah on the 81st day, and she's waiting for the sun to set. Right now, then I'll bring you the Rishonim's other questions on this. But now, so what does Abaye answer on to him? Amalei Abaye, what does Abaye answer to him? Atanani Mechaser of Shemesh, Amalei Abaye, Shimshim Amel Arba. He got Abaye gives the answer that Rava gave to him. So you see that Abaye ever changed his mind and went back to Rava's position, that when the sun sets, that something happens by itself. If it happens by itself, that's not an issue at all. The problem is, if she goes to the mikvah on the 81st day, how is she bringing her karbanot? She needs to go to the mikvah, get her of Shemesh, to bring her karbanot. So why is she not bringing her meaning that she mechuser her karbanot? So the Rosh comes up with a case, goes through all these different scenarios to come up with a case where she can go to the mikvah. Alright, I'll read the Mishnah if you guys want to go. But just read the Mishnah. I'm sure they'll read the Mishnah again to Mara to do the daf. Alright, a motze mace, bila mushko kedarko. Person finds a mace that's lying out like someone would bury a mace. Note lo ve'et kusato. You take it and the earth that's around it and you can remove it. Because you don't consider it. This is assuming that this is not a known Beit HaKvarot. Just a place, you bump into a mace from a place that's not known to have a great on Kabarot. So you take the mace and the tfusato, shnayim. If you bump into two mace like this, the lime at tfusatan. You take them and the dirt that's around them. Matash kosha, if you find three, if you expend zed lezemi dalad amot, that's one amot. If there's the distance between them is 4 to 8 amot, right? And this comes actually out of the Gemara, so I'm going to focus about what this 4 and 8 amot are. But basically, that was the way they buried, the distance they buried between meitim. And therefore, what is the assumption now? If they're less than 4 or 8 amot away, are zish kunat kvarot, that is a beta kvarot. This already is a beta kvarot. Beta kvarot, in our day, not like we think about a cemetery spread out in the dirt, their beta kvarot were caves. Right? They're kuchim that were carved into the stone. You go to Beit Kuvrin today, you can see them. They have those kuchim that are there, and you can see the kuchim all along. They have little areas where they put the mace on each side through the cave. Right? So now this is, you bumped into this. Now the assumption is that you bumped into a Beit HaKvarot. If it's a Beit HaKvarot, then you're not allowed to move the mace, number one. And number two is, you have to be both at the middle of Hala and Esri Mama. Now you have to check in each direction 20 amot. Because now we assume that you're in a Beit HaKvarot. If you're in a Beit HaKvarot already, you start to look for other Beitim that are in that area. And 20 amot will get you across the entire spectrum of what would have been a cave. Matzah Echad, the Sofesri Mama, you find another mace at the end of that Amah, and by the Gemino on Esri Mama, you have to do another 20 amot because Shiraglaim the Davar, that is Shiraglaim the Davar that you've actually found, you're in a Beit HaKvarot, and it's continuing the Beit HaKvarot. She'ilu, Mishnah says, that if you had come from the other side, had you started checking from the other side and bumped into this one mace, right then you would have been able to kill him at Sonogo at Tusato. You would be able to remove him at Tusat because it would have just been one mace. But now that you have the other three on the other side, now you're bumping into this one takes on a different status because of the other three that he bumped into first that were in within a context of Beit Kvarot. Had he been digging from the other side and bumped into the mace first, then you would have been able to remove that mace because that would have been within 1 month.
And then he went in so
that no, he has to return it. Once he's moved it, he moved it.
He didn't move it, and then...
Alright, once then, once he bumps in those three retroactively, then you have a problem. No, you have to remove it. That's why as soon as you find it, you want to move it, because then it won't be established as a Beit HaKvarot until after you find more Meitim. Alright, we'll stop here in the Mishnah. Tomorrow we'll just deal with this more.